Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
Disrespect, so when I bust my rhyme, you break your neck. We got 5 minutes for us to disconnect.
All the band is out on the field. He's looking for the ball. We are so away from tradition, because when we be out, girl, it's full of that. Smith caught him right down the line. It may go. Go crazy, folks.
Let's get into it. Pass comes into Jordan. Here's Michael at the foul line. A shot on Elo. Good!
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Sporting Edge. I'm taking the reins today. Xander, and I got a special guest with me again. You heard him a few weeks ago. The guy is a crystal ball. Told you to, you know, buy low on Baylor. They're now ranked in the top five, number four in the AP top 25. So I'm bringing back the man, the myth, the legend, Ethan Rosenzweig, Roz, Rozzy Booze Bags. What's up, buddy?
Not too much. Happy holiday seasons to everybody listening.
Yeah, so, I mean, we got a lot of exciting stuff going on. You know, NFL, we got a full Saturday slate. So we're actually going today. A couple games on Sunday. We got a game Monday. We had a game on Thursday, so we just basically we're getting more than half the week of the NFL, and that's the sad part about that is it's almost over. Week 16, it goes by so fast. I know me and Roz both got knocked out of our fantasy playoffs, so we're a little salty, but still can salvage a little bit on the daily fantasy spectrum. But Roz, taking a look at the NFL, you know, I want to talk a little bit about that Thursday night game, Giants Eagles. I thought this was kind of a must win. For the Giants, they've been playing some great football this year, but in typical Giants fashion, they found a way to come out and just, you know, basically get spanked. I know the game ended up as a one-possession game, but they gave up 14 points right out of the gate. Eli Manning tosses three picks and in a crucial one at the end of the game, and an 11-catch, 150-yard effort by Odell Beckham kind of gets, you know, overshadowed by the Giants losing this game to an Eagles team that had lost five in a row. Hadn't really looked good except those first three or four games of the year. I mean, was this typical Giants or what, E?
I think it was typical Giants, and as you mentioned, this was a must-win. The Packers were already fighting back into it, looking mostly for a divisional spot with some big losses from Tampa, and now this big Giants loss. The Giants have to go play another tough divisional game next week. I think it's boding well for the Green Bay Packers, and I think this is just typical New York Giants football as they are imploding at the wrong time.
Yeah, you know, we'll see how it goes. You know, the Giants are one of those notorious teams. They're very dangerous, I feel like, during the playoffs. I mean, both their Super Bowl wins, you know, came when they weren't, you know, I believe they didn't win their division. They were just kind of coming in as a 5 or 6 seed, but just got hot at the right time. So, I mean, we still got 2 weeks of football left, so I'm not going to, you know, say this game is going to define the rest of their season, but they looked not very sharp for a team that is fighting for playoff position and definitely needed to come out and show a better effort in that game. But, Roz, looking back at Week 15, a couple big games, give a lot of credit to the Titans. We had them on the show last week. You know, they came in as a road underdogs and scored 12 unanswered points in the fourth quarter to take down a pretty damn good Kansas City Chiefs team, 19-17. I mean, Roz, looking at Marcus Mariota and what that backfield's been doing this year, I mean, DeMarco Murray, you know, maybe there was the system in Philadelphia that did him in. I mean, he's looked awfully good this year. I mean, he kind of reminds me of what he was like in Dallas. I mean, ground and pound. I mean, 100 yards a game and a touchdown basically every week. And this Titans team, I think, you know, if that defense behind Dick LeBeau can keep it up, this team could be a little bit dangerous in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think the Titans will definitely have the best shot of making it out of the AFC South. They play the Jaguars this week. It's a favorable line. It's -5. The Jaguars are just imploding completely. They're just fired their coach. You want to bet against a team who has just fired their coach. Emotionally, they will not be in the game this week. So I would take the Tennessee Titans. I know it's a little scary on the road, but if you think about it, it is a must-win game for the Titans, who are tied with the Houston Texans, I believe, right? They're tied?
Yeah, they're both 8-6. And speaking of the Texans, we had a pretty gritty comeback win by Tom Savage, of all people. The $72 million man, Roz, I think has found a new seat, and that's on the bench. Brock Osweiler has been brutal the entire season. I mean, almost hard to watch, brutal. And Tom Savage came in and led this team to victory. Actually decided to throw the ball at DeAndre Hopkins, which they haven't really done all year, and looked decent. So he's going to get a chance to play tonight in a primetime game in a matchup I think, you know, is pretty favorable. I think the Texans have a good shot to win this game. But, I mean, did you see Tom Savage play at all, Lee, and what were your thoughts on him?
Well, my initial thoughts is just I would take the money and sit on the bench if I'm Brock Osweiler. It looks fantastic. I would love making that money, and it just shows that free agency quarterbacks is tough. The great ESPN article came out this week about finding your franchise quarterback, and if you look at the best teams, the teams winning Super Bowls, there's only been two free agent quarterbacks signed to win Super Bowls, and that was Drew Brees with the Saints, and Spacey on the other one right now. But if you think about the Green Bay Packers, they found Aaron Rodgers, even the Patriots, who found Tom Brady in the seventh round. It's really about drafting your franchise quarterback, and this is just another prime example of a wasted dollar sign on a quarterback.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people were questioning the move by John Elway to get rid of Osweiler because, you know, the quarterback situation in Denver was looking pretty dire. And it seems like he made the right decision, but he also might have, you know, had another screw-up because Trevor Siemian has been very underwhelming this year and, you know, could end up being the reason why this Broncos team is not going to make the playoffs. And, you know, I know the defense hasn't been as great as it was last year, but, you know, Trevor Siemian, I think, has more or less been a bust this year. I mean, he never was supposed to be great, you know, more of a game manager, but I really don't think he's done his part this year, and these Broncos receivers have struggled, the running game has struggled, and the whole offense is kind of stagnant this year.
Yeah, I would say the same, although very interesting enough, Trevor Siemian is over the 3,000-yard mark. He seems to always put up those games, and this is why I would tell you to avoid him in any fantasy format, even if you're trying to save money on DraftKings or FanDuel. He likes to put up 300 yards. He just cannot find the end zone, and that's been the problem for the Broncos. The Broncos put up a fight last week, not offensively, but defensively. They held Tom Brady to 4 fantasy points in most standard leagues. So this Broncos D is there. They just don't have the offensive firepower to keep up with teams right now, and they have many division losses this year that will most likely keep them out of the postseason.
Right. I mean, and they got dominated last week by the Patriots. I mean, this was a prototypical Patriots beatdown. You know, I did have the Broncos in this game. I thought they were going to come out and fight hard, and, you know, they just got pounded. You know, touchdown and 3 field goals for the Patriots, but they really started this game on top and never looked back. It wasn't close. And, Roz, that brings me to my next topic, MVP talk. You know, I think a lot of the writers right now, it's pretty close, but I think people are leaning towards Tom Brady right now as the NFL MVP. You know, you got any thoughts?
I do have thoughts. I think it's early to call the race. I think that there's been a resurgence. If you look since week 7, the best quarterback in the NFL statistically has been Aaron Rodgers. And I think if Aaron Rodgers pulls off this comeback towards the end of the season, losing 4 in a row, last time we had me on the show, I was a very sad Packer fan. And I know this might be a biased opinion here.
You think?
But I think Aaron Rodgers, I think Aaron Rodgers has what it takes to maybe make an MVP candidate, kind of make it interesting with Tom Brady. And I don't think you should overlook Derek Carr as well, what he's doing in Oakland.
Yeah, I mean, Derek Carr is very interesting. I mean, he's had a breakout year, his third year in the league. But we're going to have to talk about it after the break. If you miss a show, you know where to find us, libertytalk.fm. And we will see you next segment. We're going to talk about some more pro football, and we're going to get into college basketball and some pro basketball. See you after the break. What's up, everybody? We're back. Roz, we were talking about the MVP race, looking at a few guys who are near the top. Tom Brady, Matt Ryan, I think you got to throw in there. Ezekiel Elliott, Derek Carr, we talked about. Aaron Rodgers, who, you know, being a Homer Packers fan, you needed to throw him in there. And I think Dak Prescott could also get a little love in the votes. You know, I don't think it's going to end up being Prescott or Ezekiel Elliott. And basically the fact that, I mean, this Dallas Cowboys offensive line is so good. I think that, you know, the better they are, it takes a little bit of credit away from guys like Zeke and Dak Prescott. And nothing against them. It's just, I think it's always harder for a running back to win the MVP unless he just has an absolutely dominating season. You know, I'm talking about like a 2,000-yard Adrian Peterson-type season. But, you know, 16, 17, 1,800 yards, those are unbelievable years. But I think you very rarely see a running back win like that. I mean, I think it's always favors the quarterbacks. I mean, you know, they're kind of the be-all, end-all of MVP voting. Unless we have a dominant defensive performance, I mean, guys like Khalil Mack, Von Miller, those guys, I think, are always near the conversation. We talk about MVP. But, Roz, you said Aaron Rodgers has a chance to win. Are you going with him? I want you to make a pick for the rest of the year. I want you to make a pick, and we're going to come back in a few weeks and see if you were right.
I can't go with Aaron Rodgers. It's he's too far. The odds are not in his favor, as Vegas would put it. And I'm going to have to pick Tom Brady, what he's been able to do. I know Jimmy Garoppolo was able to put up wins, which maybe devalues a little bit of Tom Brady's MVP race. But it's going to be a Tom Brady season, and he's going to win MVP, and Roger Goodell is going to have to kind of bear with that.
Yeah, I mean, you can tell Goodell and the Patriots don't get along very well. I'm going to make my pick. I think Derek Carr is going to win this season's MVP. Tom Brady's been great. I know he missed the four games. I don't really count that against him. You know, he's been spectacular basically this whole season. But I think what Derek Carr has been able to do with this Raiders team, first playoff appearance in, I believe, you know, 13 or 14 years, it's been a truly special year. But, Roz, we got week 16. We got some big games, and I wanted to go over a couple of them. Packers-Vikings, your Packers, your seven-point favorites at home against a Vikings team that has severely underwhelmed after those first five games of the season. They're 2-7 since then, have looked pretty bad. Did the Packers take it home? And not only did they take it home, but did they cover the 7 points?
Packers are going to take this home, and I can tell you not to bet this game. I would tell you to avoid betting the Green Bay Packers at all costs. I've been betting them all season, and it's tough being a fan and betting on your team and seeing a team win, but you losing the bet. And I'll explain. Mike McCarthy does not know how to play with the lead. As you saw last week, 17-point lead going into the fourth quarter, and they end up winning the game by 3. The line was -4, so it was a tough loss for people who wanted to bet the Green Bay Packers. Mike McCarthy is way too conservative with the ball. And as you can see that in many games, even dating back to that Seattle 15-point lead with 4 minutes left in the NFC Championship game, that still stings Packer fans' hearts, starting with that onside kick.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think the Packers, I mean, they found a little bit of a running game last week. Ty Montgomery, you know, 16 carries, you know, some over 150 yards. I mean, he looked spectacular. So I think that bodes well for him. But I'd agree with Roz on this one. I would stay away. You know, it's hard to trust the Packers to cover, and you never know what you're going to get from Sam Bradford and the Vikings. It's usually bad. Sam Bradford is the king of dumping the ball off in the flat, but you never know. He might surprise. I think this game will be pretty close. I mean, division rivalries. Usually, I mean, you can throw records out the window for the most part. I think this will be a pretty competitive game in the Vikings' defense. You know, they've been a little inconsistent this year, but, you know, when they're performing at their peak, I think they're one of the better defenses in the NFL. Roz, Colts-Raiders, this is a must-win for the Colts. They're in third place in that division. They're 7-7. They're +3.5 on the road against Oakland, who I guess doesn't really need this game, but what's your take?
I would tell you to take Oakland in this game. You're going across country, West Coast, and Oakland's going for the win. I know that's not necessarily needed for Oakland, but Derek Carr, like you said, he's going to keep showing that MVP style play. They're going to take it to Oakland, or take it to the Colts, and unfortunately end their season this week.
Yeah, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if the Colts season ended this week. I mean, you know, basically during Chuck Pagano's tenure, besides that one playoff push where it's actually Bruce Arians at the helm, I mean, they've been a very disappointing team. And Andrew Luck, you know, dealt with some injuries. the past couple years. It's gotten, I think he's gotten back to form a little bit, but I agree with Roz. I like the Raiders here. Even with that half point, I think Derek Carr comes out. I'm looking for a big game. Latavius Murray, all you daily fantasy people out there, he's kind of the bell cow of this team, and I think he's going to find a lot of holes against this Indianapolis defense, who is notorious for having a lot of holes. So I think he runs. I think he runs wild this week. Roz, Bucks, Saints. You know, the Bucks played pretty well last week against the Giants, but they came up short. Or excuse me, the Cowboys. They came up short. They did cover, though, 6.5. They're playing a Saints team who is, you know, not in playoff contention anymore, but they are +3.5 on the road. Does Jameis Winston have enough stuff, you know, to get past the Saints this week?
I don't believe so. I think we saw how the Saints have rebounded last week. I know Drew Brees had been in a little bit of a lull, and it
Cost me in fantasy playoffs.
Absolutely, I feel bad for you there. But you've seen him on a lull, usually on the road, but you expect great home performances. His last home performance was very dismal. So this week he's going to come out in the Superdome, and he's going to take it to this Tampa Bay team, hurting their playoff chances.
Okay, last game I wanted to go over, Monday night, Lions-Cowboys. I think there's going to be an upset here. I think Matt Stafford is going to have the game of his life. 350 yards and 4 touchdowns. I think he's going to lead the Lions past the Cowboys. And I think Matt Stafford, that's going to be his push to win the MVP, because I think, you know, definitely got to put him into consideration for what he's done with his Lions team.
I am on the other end of this. I think Dallas is going to take it almost by 14 points. They're going
really?
To be at home.
14.
Detroit is another one of those teams that likes to just fold at the end of the season. I know Matt Stafford's looking very good and is trying to make an MVP case for himself as well. Detroit going on the road, tough loss for them last week against the Giants. I think they're going to continue to struggle against the NFC East. I think the Cowboys win 30-13.
30-13. All right, so we got a couple games were on opposite sides. We both do agree on the Raiders, so chalk that up for this week. We're going to go one official selection. We've got Oakland -3.5. All right, Raj, a little NBA talk. George Karl is burning a lot of bridges right now with his new book, Furious George, calling out everybody left and right that he didn't like over his tenure as an NBA coach, specifically Carmelo Anthony, Kenyon Martin, and J.R. Smith. Did you hear about the comments at all, and what do you think?
I think it's interesting him going after Carmelo Anthony, because without Carmelo Anthony, George Karl doesn't have those years of success in Denver. I know success.
What years of success? What did they do?
That's what I was about to say. Success is measured by championships, yet in the NBA you've got usually a two-team race, like as you see now, it being the Warriors or the Cavaliers. But you're also measured in the NBA by making the postseason, and most coaches are kept if you can make it a couple of rounds. Carmelo Anthony was able to constantly bring that team to the postseason and win a couple of rounds here and there. I know and understand that rings are what really define a coach, but to rip your best player who made your career last a little bit longer in Denver is a little bit rough.
Well, I disagree. I mean, I think Denver sucked while, you know, they were both there, and I blame it on both of them. I don't really care about getting to the first round. You know, it's kind of like the Bengals. You know, Andy Dalton makes the playoffs every year but can't win a game. What's the point? I see his point on Carmelo and not playing defense. Comments were a little harsh, basically calling him out for more than his defense, just him kind of being egocentric, self-centered, egotistical, whatever you want to call it. But I guess this is just George Karl. You know, he's never been afraid to speak his mind. Kenyon Martin, absolutely furious about the comments Karl made about him. Actually said he might go out and buy a few books just to burn them. And J.R. Smith obviously wasn't happy as well. But you know what? The guy's speaking his mind, and he's probably going to sell a few more books because of this controversy that it's created. But I don't disagree about the comments about Carmelo. You know, I think his entire career, he's basically been a loser. I mean, he's a great offensive player, put up a lot of stats, but he's never really won and never really won the big game. That's all the time we got now for the Sporting Edge. We'll see you next segment. If you miss a show, you find us on libertytalk.fm.
What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here. The long-awaited Bubba Report. bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialdini, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got the Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report.
And what's up, everybody? We're back. Sporting Edge. I'm here with Roz, the man. Roz, we're on the topic of the NBA. The Kings and the Marcus Cousins. Is it time for the two to part ways?
It's long overdue. 3 years overdue. To Marcus Cousins, it is time to go, and the route is being paved. There has been talks that, for the longest time, John Wall and DeMarcus Cousins have been in talks of meeting up and joining and making their own so-called super team. They're also in talks with trying to get Eric Bledsoe at the end of his contract to come out. They're thinking Washington, but it looks tough for Washington after giving the major max deal to Bradley Beal. So it's going to be up in the air where that team comes together, but it is time for the Kings and DeMarcus Cousins to separate. It is a terrible, terrible relationship and needs to end.
Yeah, I mean, the time that DeMarcus Cousins has been on the Kings, I mean, it's kind of been a dysfunctional relationship. The Kings have been pretty much awful every year. Nothing has really worked. DeMarcus Cousins has kind of run wild. It's a shame. I mean, the guy is an unbelievable player. I mean, I when I watch him, I get a little scared just of how tenacious he is as a basketball player. I think definitely one of the best big men in the NBA, but they've just never been able to make this work, you know, with Rajon Rondo, Rudy Gay, other guys they've brought in. I mean, this has been going on, you know, going on 7 years, and the Kings really have nothing to show for a guy who is, I think, probably a top 10 player in the NBA. But, I mean, you know, that's how it goes. Not everybody can behave and follow all the rules all the time. I mean, I think I heard a stat that DeMarcus Cousins has, like, you know, 25 more technical fouls than anybody, like a second place guy since he's been in the league. So the guy obviously got a little bit of an attitude problem, but I think they're eventually going to ship him off because, I mean, this just hasn't worked at all. But Roz, also Shaq's number was retired the other night. 10 years after he brought the Heat a championship with Dwayne Wade. I mean, did you see the ceremony at all?
I did see the ceremony. It was very nice. I'm excited for Shaquille O'Neal, and it was a great time as I'm a big D-Wade supporter since his time at Marquette. It was very nice to see Shaquille O'Neal come and bring that championship to Miami and give Dwayne Wade his first opportunity. The ceremony was perfect. He received a replica 18-wheeler with his number on it as well. He's a living legend, and he took it from L.A. to Miami, and it's good to see that it worked.
Yeah, I thought it was cool listening to Shaq talk before the ceremony. You know, he was getting interviewed on ESPN, and basically said when he came to Miami, he pulled D Wade aside and basically said, you know, this is your team. I'm coming to help us win a championship, and I really appreciated that from Shaq. You know, one of the biggest feuds I think in professional basketball history, you know, when talking about teammates, was the one between Kobe and Shaq, and that was when both guys were, I think, basically at the peaks of their careers. You know, Kobe's a little younger than Shaq, but they were both at their peaks, and they were both some big personalities that didn't always agree. I mean, they had a great run, though. They won a few championships, but I thought that was very noble of Shaquille O'Neal to come over to Miami and do that, and it ended up working out. You know, they won a championship. Shaq has been around the game for a long time, and he continues to be a big part of it. I mean, he's a great personality. He's a great ambassador for the NBA. I mean, he's a hard-to-miss guy. You know, 7 foot, 300 pounds. You know, I think he's going to be around the league for a long time. And, you know, he's a great commentator. Love his stuff. He's funny. Him and Charles Barkley shooting the shit. Very entertaining to watch. Roz, a little college basketball now. Bracketology. I know you got a lot of stuff for us regarding NCAAs right now. So hit me with all your knowledge.
before I hop into the college basketball, I would just like to take a second and rest in peace, Craig Sager. It was a tough week losing one of TNT's best out of Atlanta. He did many games, and it's only fitting that his last game was the NBA Finals. And LeBron James says it best in that short interview clip. And I hope you guys get the chance to check it out. But rest in peace, Craig Sager. Now, back to college basketball. Bracketology is out. Joe Lunardi has announced and shown us what he believes to be the first bracket. And as Xander said, I came in earlier this or a couple weeks ago talking about this Baylor team that wasn't ranked. And this Baylor team that wasn't ranked, they're looking very athletic, very talented. But I'm gonna take a back seat with Baylor here for a second. It's a very athletic team, but they don't have what's necessary to win a national championship. I think they're gonna go far. But I don't see on here from Joe Lunardi is that he does not feel UCLA is going to be a one seed when it comes tournament time. And I think they're the all around team currently. You need a point guard, you need a team that can shoot free throws, and UCLA continues to prove that over and over again in every competition they are in, and I believe they're gonna be that team at the end of March Madness.
Yeah, so I mean, looking at the bracket that CBS Sports put out, Bracketology, 4-1 seeds, Villanova, Baylor, UCLA, Kansas. So I guess Lunardi's bracket is a little bit different. But, you know, Baylor, I mean, Roz, like you said, they're a great team. But I agree with you. I don't know if they're deep enough to make a tournament run all the way to the end. But, I mean, you never know. It's early. We got a lot of basketball to play. But, I mean, Villanova Wildcats, they're playing some awfully good basketball. They're still undefeated, you know, after that unbelievable championship game last year. So, I mean, they're obviously a team to look out for. But, I mean, I think two other teams that have got to be on the radar are Louisville and Kentucky. I mean, I watched that game a few days ago, and it was unbelievable. It's quite a sight when those two teams play each other.
Yeah, so Louisville, congratulations on the win. It's a very big win. It'll go far in determining their seed towards the end of the season. But Kentucky fans or people who are considering picking Kentucky in their tournament, I would tell you not to worry. I think Kentucky plays a very tough schedule. I feel that John Calipari asks a lot out of his team in this non-conference grind that he has. And I believe that taking it to the road at Louisville, it's tough. The atmosphere is crazy. It's cross-state rivalry right there. So a three-point loss, not too concerned, especially after it came after a grinding game against North Carolina where they won 103-100. And Malik Monk put up 40-plus points, setting a school record. I think that it's important to understand that the difference with this Kentucky team from a year's past as the ones that weren't finishing and winning those championships is they have a shooter now, and I think Malik Monk is really going to be vital to this Kentucky team moving forward. They're athletic as can be, and they can shoot the ball now. So watch out for this Kentucky team come March Madness.
Yeah, you know, one thing about John Calipari's teams is, I mean, they're always battle-tested. I mean, they're never an easy out in the NCAA tournament, and like Roz, like you said, they play a very tough schedule, and I agree. Calipari asks a lot out of his guys, and that's why I think they are so prepared come tournament time. I mean, the college basketball regular season is, you know, it's important, but, you know, if you make the tournament, you make the tournament. If you're in this top 64, you got a chance to win. And, I mean, that's what's great about having such a tough schedule. I mean, you can lose four or five games, and, you know, it doesn't really matter. You get in as a two or three seed. Whatever, regardless of what happens, I mean, the road is always paved with tough matchups, and you're going to run into one of the top teams in the tournament eventually, no matter what. And the fact that year in and year out, this team is always ready to go, I think they're dangerous. But at the same time, Louisville is also a very dangerous team. That was a spectacular win. It was close. The game was wire to wire, and they pulled it out down the stretch. I thought for a second they were going to give up that 6-point lead that they had with about 45 seconds, but hit a couple free throws. Everything was all good. So, Roz, is that all we're looking at for college basketball right now, or do we have to bring up Grayson Allen tripping somebody again?
Yeah, because I wanted to bring up college basketball before I mentioned Grayson Allen. College basketball is at the peak right now. Their teams, UCLA, Duke, Kansas, Kentucky, the top teams that we love and know in this country that make NCAA basketball one of the best spectacles on television. It is in full swing this year, and the talent is unbelievable. It's going to be so fun to watch as conference play begins next week. But, yeah, let's talk about Duke, which is exciting because Harry Giles is back, and I think it's this Duke team is going to have to sit Grayson Allen for a little bit because ACC is going to come in and throw on or slap on a suspension, adding to whatever Duke's indefinite suspension is going to be. And a lot of people are talking that this is a mental thing with Grayson Allen, and that they need to have almost like an intervention type situation with Grayson Allen. They say he was a soccer player when he was younger. He was aggressive on the soccer field, and that tripping was kind of part of the game in his life, and there's no place for that in basketball, and it's very apparent that he's doing it purposefully, and little intervention seems to be needed.
Yeah, I mean, this is getting ridiculous. I mean, Grayson Allen is the third time. It just, you know, I understand that guy, you know, some guys are labeled as more dirty players than others. There's, you know, play a little more aggressive, have a little more of a motor, but there's no place for, you know, this kind of crap to happen in basketball. I mean, this being the third time, it's more than just an accident now. Obviously, this is the part of this guy's MO, and I don't know how long Duke's going to suspend him, but I agree with what you said, Roz. They need to suspend him, I think, at least for a few games. I mean, get his head back on straight, because this is getting ridiculous, and, you know, I don't know how hard the ACC is going to come down on him, but you can bet that they're going to try to send a message to this guy. That's all the time we got for the Sporting Edge right now. We got one more segment left on this beautiful Saturday morning. And if you miss a show, you know where to find us, libertytalk.fm. And we will see you after the break. And we're back, Sporting Edge, Roz. Last segment, I think we got to talk a little bit about college football. And you know, before we get to the games, Roz, we got a trend starting to form here with guys sitting out and not choosing to play in their team's bowl games. You know, first we had Leonard Fournette a couple weeks ago. Then we had Christian McCaffrey. Then we had, I forgot his name, but another running back from Baylor. And then we have an offensive lineman now. It's becoming a trend, and I don't know if I like it. I don't think I do. Pete Carroll came out, said the same thing. He doesn't like it, doesn't appreciate it. A lot of people are torn on this issue because, you know, I see both sides very clearly, but I just don't like the trend.
It's not a great trend, but it's going to be the trend. It's very apparent what the NCAA has established as the important bowl games, and that is the college football playoffs. Outside of that, now how relevant are these bowls to other people? They're fun for us to watch, give us more sports to watch on television and bet on potentially. It's going to keep happening, and unfortunately, these players are looking out for themselves instead of the team, which is usually the college backing, is that it's such a team sport. But they are looking for their NFL futures, want to stay safe. We don't want to see a Leonard Fournette torn ACL in a bowl game. That would just be very unfortunate.
Yeah, well, I mean, the weird thing is, I mean, Ezekiel Elliott came out and basically said, this echoed Pete Carroll's thoughts, kind of backed off a little bit. You know, he said, if guys are injured, I understand that. The ironic thing about that is, you remember when Ezekiel Elliott faced Notre Dame's Jalen Smith in that, you know, basically meaningless bowl game at the end of his career. Jalen Smith was supposed to be a top five pick, with an unbelievable linebacker for Notre Dame, and ended up shredding his knee in that game and has not played it down in the NFL. So essentially lost millions of dollars by getting hurt in that bowl game. So, I mean, that's definitely one of the cases where you could say, you know, these guys are making the right decision by sitting out. But for me, Roz, at what point, you know, do these players start sitting out earlier now? I mean, a guy like Leonard Fournette, I mean, LSU is not making it to the college football playoff after week 7. You know, are guys going to start, you know, folding in the tent before these bowl games? Or you know, is this going to trend just stay at the bowl games?
I don't believe that is the case. I don't have all the legal or insurance facts on this, but they are under scholarship to participate in the season. I believe bowls are a postseason activity that aren't part of the scholarship. I think they have to finish out their season. Once again, I can be completely wrong on this, but I do know the players are expected, unless injured, to participate in all team activities as well as their games throughout the course of a season.
Okay, and another thing that rubs me the wrong way, Roz, would these guys be doing the same thing if their teams were in the college football playoff? Because I think you could bet your ass that if LSU was, you know, in the top four, Leonard Fournette would be suiting up and playing those games. So, I mean, maybe I'm wrong. What do you think?
Well, that's what it is. The NCAA, once again, has made it apparent how important the college football playoff is and the lack of importance for all the other bowl games. So Leonard Fournette would be suited up and hoping that he could show us flashes of those 200-yard games he used to have if his team would have made the postseason.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think most of these guys would play, that being the case, but, you know, like you said, these games, they are exhibition games. I mean, they really have no playoff significance unless you're in the top four, and it's basically just, you know, an end-of-the-season party where we all get to watch a bunch of football, but really kind of meaningless when you talk about, you know, futures of programs. I mean, it's nice to win a BCS Bowl in whatever bowl game you happen to be in, but really doesn't mean much in terms of next season. I mean, recruiting, I understand there's some points, but, I mean, these games are basically exhibitions. But you know what? Enough about that. Let's talk about some of these big games coming up. I know we had games sprinkled out all the way up until New Year's, but there's a couple big games I'm looking at. And before we go over the playoff, my first game is Michigan is facing Florida State. Florida State's a 7-point dog in the Orange Bowl. And you know what? Roz, I think Florida State has been a little disappointing this year, but I think they're going to come out, and I think they're going to beat Michigan straight up in this game. How about that?
That's interesting because, once again, I'm going to have to take the other side of this. I think
really?
That the Big Ten, really, unbelievably, I know, Big Ten is going to dominate this bowl season, and you're going to see it here. Right now, you can get Michigan -7 even, no juice on that. I'm taking Michigan all the way. I think you're going to see them blow out Florida State. The defenses are completely different. I know Florida State has a better offense, but it's not going to get past this Wolverines defense, allowing Michigan to win this game probably 28-13.
Yeah, I mean, Michigan's defense has been pretty stout all year, and it always worries me giving guys like, you know, the Harbaughs, the Myers, the Sabins more time to prepare than usual. That usually doesn't bode well for other people because they're some of the greatest coaches in the game. But Roz, you know, I talked a little bit with Bubba last week about, you know, the playoff games, Alabama, Washington, Ohio State, Clemson. I wanted to talk a little bit about Ohio State, Clemson first. I'm a fan of Ohio State in this game. You know, they're a 3-point favorite. I think they're a better team. And like I said last week, Clemson has been, I think, very inconsistent this season. I know they went 12-1, but I think they were kind of asking for it all year, and they finally lost. They lost to Pittsburgh in a game they never should have lost. You know, but happened to pull out 12 other wins. They had a great win against Louisville. I think we saw Louisville was not as good of a team as everybody thought they were at the beginning of the year. And like I made the point about preparation, I mean, a guy like Urban Meyer, I mean, the guy is dangerous. And I think Ohio State wins this game pretty handedly over the Tigers.
Which is interesting, and which is the side that I've been on mostly coming up to this postseason. I think Ohio State is the team expected to win. I know it's -3 right now. I really think that it's going to be a push either way, however you want to take it. I think it's going to be close. But what's interesting to me is I'm starting to feel a little bit of Clemson magic in the air. There's a lot of talk. Deshaun Watson coming out said he doesn't care if he didn't win the Heisman. He's the best player in college football. There's a little magic. I think Clemson, everyone expects Clemson to lose this game. I mean, I'm even on the side that Ohio State's going to pull this one off. But I'm not. Wouldn't be shocked for a Clemson 3-point victory here. I think Clemson has the potential. And I think Watson is fiery, and he's one of those guys that wants to show in his last season here that he can bring a championship to Clemson. I don't know. Watch out. This game's gonna be fun to watch.
I agree. I think it'll be a great game. And if you think about the championship game last year, Roz, I mean, Clemson was basically one game-changing play from winning that game. I think, you know, they were within a score, made a huge mistake, gave up another touchdown to Alabama, but, I mean, they were this close. I thought they outplayed the Crimson Tide in that game, honestly. I know they lost, but I thought they played the better football game. They just couldn't pull out the victory, didn't make enough big plays in the game. But, like you said, this is going to be an awesome game. Ohio State has been pretty damn good all year, and they might be a little lucky to be here. JT Barrett doesn't convert on fourth down. I think we're singing a different story here, but regardless, it's over. Ohio State, Clemson, I think is a must-watch game. Now let's talk about the other game, Roz. Washington, Alabama. Alabama is more than a 2-score favorite right now. Game is 15 points. I think Alabama would be a double-digit favorite over any team in college football right now. Does Washington have any chance in this game, Roz?
Obviously, anything can happen in a football game. I just can't give even the slightest chance to Washington. I think this is, like I mentioned with the Michigan game, Washington is now going up against a defense. We understand that we heard that Colorado had a great defense throughout the year in the Pac-12. but they're facing this Alabama Crimson Tide defense, and Browning is not going to be able to figure it out, I can tell you that much. 15 is a lot of points to bet on, but that would be the way I would tell you to go if you're betting. I think that Alabama does come in and, in stereotypical fashion, just slaughter this team. But it shouldn't be a thought that, hey, it's going to be a double-digit spread in the championship game. I think whoever comes out of that Clemson-Ohio State game will give Alabama a show in the championship.
Yeah, I mean, Alabama's defense is, I think, this defense this year in particular could be the best that college football has ever seen, and I agree. Alabama, no matter how many points they're favored by, I think a spread, I feel like, very rarely factors in to their games. I mean, you make one mistake against these guys, and it's, you know, a 20-point swing. You saw it against Florida. Florida came down their opening drive and scored. And before you know it, Alabama's defense had basically put up 17 points on the board. So, I mean, you talk about great defenses and great teams. Alabama, I think that's where it starts and ends college football the past 6 years. That's all the time we got for today. I want to thank Roz for being on the show. Always good to have you, and we will have you back. If you miss a show, you know where to find us, libertytalk.fm. Now go out and enjoy Saturday football. Got a couple games tomorrow. Merry Christmas to everybody. Happy holidays. Have a great time with your families, and we will see you next week. Bye-bye.
Happy holidays.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk FM.